Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. No advice.
Was that the best WWE Money in the Bank ladder match you've ever seen? I am Luke, and I'm joined by the blondest man on the planet, Adam Blumpier. How are you, sir? Okay?
I'm warm and I'm tired. How are you, more importantly? Have you slept?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Luke.
So we finished doing the stream. And then I did all the back end stuff for getting the timestamps together. And I wrote the script for the green screen review. And I recorded that about 6:30, got that all together. And I got it like gathered all together and sent across to the editor with all the images and stuff. And then I had some contractors coming over to install some wardrobes at 7. So I was like, well, there's very little point in me going to bed now, is there? So I have just powered through. I've had several cups of tea, and I fell asleep during my lunch break.
Big brave boy.
Big brave boy. Watched an episode of ER and just fell asleep a bit.
We're too old. Too old to be reviewing wrestling.
Oh, my God. Adam, I'm so tired. I've got to do another show after this.
I'm doing board game club after this. Oh. I gotta pretend to have fun.
With Denise, no less.
Oh god, of all people. Oh, it's a good show though, eh?
Oh well, I mean, that's the best thing about this, right? So we get to talk about Money in the Bank 2021. And it featured, I mean, there were a lot of things you could have talked about. You could have talked about Charlotte Flair winning the title again. You could have talked about John Cena making his return to WWE. You could have talked about Nikki ASH getting the Money in the Bank briefcase. I think I'm just getting something there about briefcases.
Oh, briefcase?
Yeah, briefcase.
Yes, it's a briefcase.
Oh, briefcase!
Yep, that's right. Yeah, she won the briefcase. And we could also talk about Roman Reigns sometimes going against the fans and the criticism I've seen recently of Sloman Reigns when it comes to his main event matches. But I think that what I want to kick off with is the real positive, which is, holy heckins, that Money in the Bank ladder match, the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, was superb. Adam.
Yeah. Agreed. Did you want more?
Cool. A little bit. Maybe we've got an hour to fill.
I mean, yeah, like perfect, really. It's my favorite. I mean, obviously, recency bias is a thing, but it's my favorite Money in the Bank ladder match for a number of reasons. First of all, what a field. Second of all, everyone was there to perform a function. Heels acted like heels. Faces acted like faces. There wasn't a lot of arbitrary, ladder stuff. Inventive spots that we haven't seen before. Kevin Owens did his thing. John Morrison did his thing. Ricochet did his thing. Everyone performed a function. Drew wasn't like he didn't win, which is the best thing that could have happened for Drew. And after a horrible, horrible year, someone that the fans have been waiting to have this kind of victory got this kind of victory. It wasn't too long. It had all the right amount of spots. I see no foul in it. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, as a, you know, compared to the women's match that came earlier in the night, I feel that the field was a bit more chaotic in terms of who was actually going to walk away with the win. When it came down to the women's match, I was like, really, it comes down to one of two people. It's either going to be Nikki A.S.H. or it's going to be Liv Morgan. Like, that was basically where I sort of fell. I couldn't see it being anyone else on that on the card. However, when it came to the men's, I was like, it could be Drew, could be Beige, it could be Seth. It could be Riddle. Like, it wasn't going to be Ricochet. It wasn't going to be Morrison. And it wasn't going to be Shinsuke Nakamura. But could have been Kevin Owens. You know, I mean, Sean Rossap, who came onto our stream last night, kind of killed that theory dead by saying, oh, no, Kevin's been asking for time off for quite a while. And WWE's answer to him requesting time off was like, can you do two ladder matches in the space of a couple of weeks, please?
Please. You how much do you want to see your family?
How much do you like your back? But like you said, like I felt everyone really fulfilled what they set out to do in here. Like, yeah, Ricochet, never any chance that he was winning this match. There was not a cat in hell's chance. Natalya had more chance of winning her match than Ricochet had winning this one.
She deserved that. Natalya, you're so weird all the time.
It's just how people talk, Adam. But yeah, but like Ricochet, like he was there to do his flips. And he did those flips really, really good. And he landed all of those flips successfully. John Morrison was there to just be a tool. And he was an amazing tool throughout this match, acting like a total knob with Seth Rollins. And like spraying his like
the drip stick.
His super soaker in Shinsuke's face when he was at the top of the ladder was kind of like wonderfully douchebag stuff. And I thought Seth actually was a really good heel as well. And I thought the promo that he cut afterwards, where he didn't win, was really, really good stuff from Seth.
And vitally, shone some doubt on the main event, which is exactly what that kind of foreshadowing should do. You weren't sure if Seth was going to come out and interfere or if Edge was going to win. And that was the program that was going to carry the Universal title into SummerSlam. We believed. Well, I mean, I did.
Well, one of the things that I've seen a few people talk about is that I'm glad Drew didn't win. I'm glad that I saw someone say, like, I'm glad the higher ups have now seen that Drew isn't the guy and they're not going with him anymore. I wanted to kind of get your I disagree with that take as well. Like, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, though, because Drew was kind of like one of the odds on favorite to win, but he felt like he was the one person people didn't really want to win.
Yeah, we just didn't need it. It's not that he's not the guy. I also really hate the idea of the guy. Whenever WWE builds their entire company around one person, you know, it always, you know, when that person goes away, then you enter a couple of years of the worst wrestling ever. But it's just, he didn't need it. It's like, he doesn't need to win the Royal Rumble for a second time. It's not that we have anything against Drew, or at least I don't. I'm sure some people do because they're contrary and don't like the idea of being told who to like. But he just didn't need to win money in the... He doesn't need to be in the main event title picture for a little bit. He can feud with Jinder over his vroom brooms, and that's absolutely fine. And then we'll build up maybe in a few months down the road. It's just, yeah, we just wanted a little break. And Money in the Bank is a concept that is predicated on someone who is not quite ready for the title being essentially shone a spotlight on by the company and saying, you watch this space soon this person. And we don't need that for Drew. Drew's a two-time WWE champion. He doesn't need the briefcase. Big E has never been WWE champion or Universal champion. He needs that briefcase.
Well, let's talk about Big E. So Beige won the match.
Beige.
Bloody thrilled for, wait for it, Beige. To win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Just absolutely delighted for him to unhook it.
Briefcase.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful moment because, like, we had a chaos extreme ourselves during the Money in the Bank live reactions because we had 10 people basically on screen, all watching the match at the same time, all at various different points of the match because of time sinks and things like that. And we all had Big E to win. Every single person that was in our stream said, I really want Big E to win. Big E is my pick to win. And Beige was the man that came out with the win in the end. And it really felt like this whole you know, both Money in the Bank winners last night have never been world champions before. And that feels like a real, like, that's a step forward in trying to create new top stars.
Yeah, it's a breakout format. It is like the Royal Rumble. It's really exciting because it lets the fans in on a peek behind who they're high on, where their intentions are going. And it just you start to frame people in a certain way. And Big E was for a long time someone that you didn't look at in that context, like Kofi. You know, like for the longest time, we didn't frame Kofi in that context of, oh, he's going to be a WWE champion. But as soon as you do, as soon as you get the idea that WWE are leaning into that, that sort of generates its own hype. And it's really exciting. And Big E's been an also-ran for such a long time. And the idea that WWE look at him and think, yeah, he can have the top belt in our company. That is exhilarating stuff. It's been a year, you know. Like WWE have done a lot wrong in the pandemic, mostly behind the scenes. But they turned Roman heel. They pushed Cesaro as a possible main eventer. They put Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania again. And they're strapping a rocket to Big E finally. Like it's a really exhilarating time. Like you say, couldn't be more happy for him. Lovely man.
Oh, isn't he just? And he's a guy that people wanted to win this year's Royal Rumble. Like he was that was a massive sway from like YouTube comments that we've had over on our product and stuff being like, I really want Big E to win the Rumble. So for him to win Money in the Bank feels like, you know, that's a really good next step in his journey. I suppose my question for you is, where do you think you go with Big E next? Do you go with Roman, who is pretty busy at the moment with John Cena? Or do you take him over to Raw and add him into the Bobby Lashley mix, given that Bobby Lashley squashed his best friend Kofi Kingston in a matter of 7 minutes?
Yeah, I do. I don't get me wrong. Like, I don't necessarily want to to mirror the Kofi Mania image of, you know, Kofi winning the title surrounded by the New Day hugging him. Like, I don't think every member of the New Day needs to win the title that exact way. But that being said, they're wrestling's one true friendship. Like they are actually a slice of like joy that actually exists in real life and has made its way onto the camera and hasn't been sort of corrupted or tainted by swerve booking and or the desperate desire that WWE has to destroy friendships for fleeting feuds. They've endured. So if Big E's going to win the title, like avenging Kofi, I want to see it. I really, really do. It's just it would just be nice.
And I'm more into that than I am Lashley Goldberg, which is the sort of rumored direction for SummerSlam. Like our top matches for SummerSlam looking for are going to be Roman Cena, Seth Edge, and Lashley Goldberg. Lashley Goldberg is not something I am massively into at all. And we had some ultra chats in yesterday that were like, I'd love to see Big E cash in just before the bell rings for that match. So is the honorable baby face, he's not like sneaking a victory in. It's strategically a terrible move to turn it into a triple threat, but it's a triple threat I'm way more interested in watching than a terrible singles match.
I think so. I don't know. I think I'd rather get Goldberg out of the way. It's really poorly timed because Big E cashing in like on Bobby tomorrow and saying, you, me, SummerSlam, let's have you. You did that to my best friend and I'm going to wreck you for it. Like that for me is the best possible way this feud could go. Cause then Bobby can double down, really hurt Kofi, really hurt Xavier, beat down Big E. And it's like, well, Big E's just got it. Can he beat Bobby? Goldberg is just a unnecessary complication in this because a lot of people hated the Kofi Bobby match for emotional reasons, not to be too patronizing, but I loved it as an angle, and I think right now the iron is hot. People are furious about what Bobby did to Kofi, so for me SummerSlam's the time, and just get Goldberg out of the way.
I agree. Yeah, like it'll be interesting because the report is there's going to be Goldberg. Goldberg's going to be making his return on Raw tonight, but we don't know if that's for sure. Like that is just a report. Like it could be the direction for SummerSlam is actually Lashley, Big E, and we're just going to continue this Hurt Business New Day feud instead. So let's kind of get through Raw tonight and sort of see where the direction is, because we could be in a situation where Big E just holds on to it for a while. Like he doesn't have to cash in right away. He could hold on to that briefcase for a couple of months. Just walk around, parade around with it. And, you know, like Edge, when he won it for the first time, didn't cash in for nearly a year.
Yeah, I know. It's weird for a face to do it. It's not impossible. I actually think Nikki should hold it for ages. I think Nikki should be the one who holds it for, you know, 6 months, building up the courage, building up, you know, becoming the superhero slowly but surely. I think Big E should. Like, I don't understand what would stop Big E now, unless he is kind of playing smart, playing cunning, playing mind games. But after yesterday, I want him to do it tomorrow. I really do.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Well, let's see what you've all got to say about this in our Ultra Chats. Charles Berg said, that finish to the women's ladder match was brilliant. Loved it. Roman Reigns continues to be our sexy anime villain. Hooray for Beige. How does WrestleTalk feel about Adam's new nickname being Toriano? I think it's some of my best work, frankly.
That's not kind. I don't. Not a Tory.
I mean, of all the days
to be called a Tory, not today.
Yeah. You turning all over the show. It's not a fair thing to call you now, is it, Adam? you're far from it, really, aren't you?
No, I'm quite Labour. I really am.
But at the same time, it's a funny play on words, though, isn't it?
It is. I can't deny that. That's fair. But I hate it. Have the fans ever given you a nickname which you've been just like, I just hate that?
So when we did MediaCon a few years back, Rich Swan was kind of just getting into watching WrestleTalk, right? And so he's basically just a big ball of energy. That is what Rich Swan is. He is just like, he's the Duracell bunny. You just wind him up and off he pops. And in the week leading up to MediaCon, he was clearly watching a lot of WrestleTalk to try and get to know us all, right? And so he sort of bounds into the room to say hi to everyone. And he's like, oh my God, it's Ollie Davis. Oh my God, it's Al Faker to Laura Blake. Problem was, I'd been on my honeymoon that week, so he didn't really know who I was. And so he just sort of paused and I just went, you. And I basically became known as the other one. And it was just...
Oh, Luke.
So it was Ollie, Laurie, and the other one.
The Triforce, yeah.
Ross also during that time as well called me Ollie Davis's side bitch, and that stuck around for a little bit.
Yes, I imagine it would.
I mean, I in fairness, I lent into that one. If you do want to have your chat read out on the wrestletalk.com/support, we'll be reading out all of your chats over the $5 limit. Ryan Lewis said, first time Ultra Chatter here. Best pay-per-view for a long time. Charlotte versus Rhea was a match of the year contender for me. Roman versus Edge, while starting slow, turned into an excellent match. Cena coming back tops it all off. He's a legend. He deserved that pop. Dylan Jason Voorhees said, last night was absolutely amazing. I've missed seeing the crowds and both Money in the Bank winners were well deserved. Salty about Edge though. Seth versus Rollins. I think that's meant to be Edge versus Rollins. Edge versus Rollins at SummerSlam for the number one contendership. Love, Dylan, number one Edgehead, future patron. Fantastic pay-per-view. HCB, I'm very, Adam, your birds are being like really coming through your microphone. It is really delightful. Have you got lots of bird song outside?
I do. I've opened up my little balcony because it's really, really, really hot. And there's just, I live in a Disney life. they're making my prom dress as we speak. Get on with it.
HCB said, hi guys, as a Brit, I also feel your sleeping pain. Last night, I said I thought the men's Money in the Bank was the best one ever. As long as they don't botch Big E's cash in, that opinion won't change. To be honest, this is the best main roster pay-per-view in the last 5, maybe 10 years.
Ooh, I mean, I don't think there's a bad match on it. I really don't. I know some people are just like, the women's match was a bit hokey for me. Didn't mind it at all. I thought it had some really fun stuff. Like, it was just an entertaining time to watch. The combination of the crowd being back, the closing, like, I could, yeah, I guess. By default, I don't know if it's like I don't know if I've kind of reached as like the highs of some of the pay-per-views. Like, the first time we watched Jey Uso versus Roman was like, that felt like a special moment. Bianca versus Sasha was kind of special. I don't know if there was necessarily, I mean, Big E, obviously you're really, really happy for him. I don't know if there's anything quite emotionally up there to be just like that moment. But in terms of like a top-to-tail pay-per-view, I there's nothing wrong with it. So yeah, I think that tracks.
And last even now, Scott Peden said, I was there in the crowd live. It was so amazing being part of a crowd again. My throat is sore this morning. Bobby winning for me cast doubt on Roman winning, but you can never bet against the Tribal Chief. Such a great show. Well, let's get into that show, Adam, because I mentioned this in my 10-minute review. I feel that the pandemic era of WWE has trained us to all think that the pre-show match doesn't matter. And we've all just been like, it's just, you know, it's two lads that go out there, or two lasses to go out there, do 7 minutes, and it means diddly dick, and we all just move on. Basically, it's just there to fill time because Jerry Lawler can't talk for an hour. And because now fans are back, it felt like this was an effort to kind of right that wrong, because we had the Usos versus the Mysterios, a match that's had story, it's had build, it's got a reason to be there, it's for the tag titles, and the Usos got the win. The Usos won the tag straps here, so that plays into the much larger, broader picture of SmackDown's title scene with Roman Reigns and everything like that. And on top of that, it was a really, really good match.
Yeah, talk about the Usos being the kind of crowned heroes of the pre-show tag match. They've done this before and a whole bunch of times. I remember they had a really good pre-show match, I think, with Seth and Roman, I think, as the Shield. That might have been a pre-show match on like a Money in the Bank one time, I think. They also had the amazing SummerSlam pre-show match against the New Day, which is one of the greatest tag matches of the last few years. Usos just turn it out on the pre-show. Every time you see them booked in for a pre-show match, just make sure you, that is appointment viewing. Yeah, I really liked it. Dominic, his first pay-per-view in front of fans, was, I think, he performed exceptionally well. I don't think him and Ray lose anything. And I think the enduring shot of the bloodline all with gold, that is like going into the start of fans being back, them being as powerful as they possibly could be. It's a really smart play.
Also, like, you want to talk about a duck to water with Dominic Mysterio and this wrestling game. He's pretty bloody good at it, you know, because he's still in his first year on the main roster. And, like, I mean, his first year sort of, like, within WWE. And he's killing it all the time, really. Like, you know, they're hiding him in tag matches, but I think he's carrying it in singles matches as well. And they had a bit of a funny little entrance where they sort of, like, Ray went back to his Lucha Underground world and just sort of, like, you know, he was in front of this Aztec temple and then they walked through a Stargate and then they came out the other side dressed as Slapjack. It was a really weird entrance.
Yeah, I don't quite understand why they did Rick and Morty meets Jason. It was a little odd. I do like the idea that Dominic and Mysterio are like a Rick and Morty duo traveling across wrestling multiverses, and they've just come back from the Friday the 13th dimension because crap, we got a tag match. And I love the idea of, yeah, like the patriarch being the shorter one, being the sort of inverse of the Rick and Morty. I think it's nice. It's very stupid, but yeah. I saw no problems with it.
But yeah, the Usos picked up the win here, as you say. Like the Bloodline now hold all the gold, apart from, you know, the sync, you know, the IC title, but the gold that sort of matters to them in their little stable. And we had a promo with them later on where Roman basically said to him, "Like, well, you can keep hold of those belts for now." And then, like, you know, Jimmy was there going, like, "Oh yeah, no, I acknowledge you, Us. I totally acknowledge you. I definitely 100% acknowledge you," without really sounding like he meant it.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
I absolutely love it.
Just every little step going forwards. Oh, it's, yeah, no complaints.
But the main show itself kicked off with the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, which was Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Nikki A.S.H. versus Natalia, Tamina, Zelina Vega, Naomi, and Asuka. I have actually, when I was reading through the comments on the 10-minute review that we posted up, I saw quite a lot of negativity towards this match.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people tweet me, like, their sort of negativity towards this match. I had some people say, like, "I turned the show off after that women's ladder match. It was so appalling that I couldn't bear to watch the rest of the show." Which,
sure,
I think,
why
is...
not?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. Like, I think that is so beyond the pale of, because, like, it wasn't a terrible match. I really enjoyed this match, in fact. I thought that everyone really got their characters across. The only stuff in this that I thought was a bit bobbins was Alexa Bliss's spooky nonsense and Tamina attempting spots. Like, that was pretty much the only, like, downside to this match.
Yeah, it was clunky. It was. They didn't transition from spot to spot to spot, like, super, you know, fluently. That's okay. Tamina got in way more offense than any of us thought she did. Gosh, she almost got it. Next year. Don't worry, Tamina. I'll be backing you next year as well. Don't you worry. Fan for life and me. Yeah, like, Natalia and Tamina are, you know, they felt like kind of meat in the room, in terms of, like, they're to kind of catch people, really. And Tamina kind of doing a bit more stuff than she kind of, it felt like she was capable of. But I thought there was lots of nice stuff. I'm on record as not, like, the spooky bollocks. Like, I don't hate it because I don't watch Raw every week, to be clear. So I don't mind a bit of weird stuff, like the hypnotizing of Zelina Vega.
Well, the hypnotizing of Zelina Vega, the reason why, like, I think it's very silly, right? I mean,
yeah.
it is silly. Proper silly it is.
You guys remember The Undertaker, also, right?
But it also, like, it didn't make a whole mess of sense. Because what happened was, Alexa Bliss went up the ladder, Zelina Vega was up the other side of the ladder, and so Alexa Bliss hypnotized her. And so, you know, decided to, like, make her raise up her hand, so it's like, you know, the two doinks, you know, doing the little mirror image thing. But then Alexa Bliss is like, "Well, now I need to make her not reach up for the belt. So I now need to walk down the ladder." Like, well, you haven't helped yourself at all there. Like, if anything, you've actually hampered your chances of winning. Because
She scampered back up whilst Zelina was still coming out of her trance. It was a viable strategy.
It was very silly. She was trying to hypnotize the briefcase to fall into her hands. Like, there was some, like, proper... And, like, I think that the crowd really told you everything you need to know, or told WWE everything that they probably need to know about this gimmick, which is that Alexa is great when she's just wrestling because the character is cool and her look is cool and her performance is cool. So let's just go with that, because when she gets into the spooky stuff, that's when the crowd goes like, nah, boo that. I'm not as into that one as I was into the other part of this.
I want to see how it goes, right? Because we've come back into fan wrestling, so they can't do a lot of the really contrived stuff that they were doing. Okay, they can't have her hacking the Thunderdome anymore. They can't have her doing kind of like random kind of fire, like bringing down equipment and crashing to the ring. Like, we're not going to see that kind of cinematic, incredibly high concept, incredibly unbelievable stuff. So I'm up for seeing what they do, like in terms of just like spooky bollocks, but having to do it in front of a live crowd, like having to try and pull off a couple of magic tricks. I'm up for it. It's Kane, it's Undertaker. I don't care. Like, I really kind of, yeah, it can wear out its welcome. And I'm glad she didn't win, because she's already won the briefcase. She doesn't really need it because she's magic. And she got taken out of the match and buried under some ladders. So I don't really see what everyone's problem is, to be honest.
It's what she deserved.
It's what she deserved. She deserved that.
Yeah, and like, WWE is a comic book. Like, it's a cartoon world.
Yeah.
Like, so it's totally fine that you have a spooky character in it. It's not for me. It's the way that I've always put it in these reviews, is that, like, it's totally fine if you're into it. It's just, it's not my cup of tea. And I think that a lot of the time it doesn't really work as well as it probably could do. But, like, what I very much enjoyed about this match, A, I enjoyed that Nikki won the match, but B, this crowd was the most wonderfully forgiving crowd, because, of course, they were. It's the first crowd back. This is their first pay-per-view big match. So there was a spot which went totally nipples north, and all of the women just sort of stood there, was like, and they all just sort of fell down, and it was really crap, and it looked as a bit rubbish. But the crowd didn't go, UF dub. Oh, that was rubbish. Boo this. They were like, no, come Ed, let's go. Just pick yourselves back up, dust yourselves off, let's get back on the horse. Let's just go to the next spot, shall we? And that was quite nice, really.
Yeah, Nikki, like, the ladder kind of almost fell out from under her, but she made the leap, you know? There was I don't want to use the term sloppy, because like, just sometimes accidents happen, sometimes spots don't go off. And, you know, that happens quite a lot in male wrestling as well. I'm not to create a straw man argument, but I do think a lot of people are. It's comparison to the men's. And also, I do think there is generally you see a lot of this kind of stuff get thrown at the women's ladder matches every single year. And it's because, yeah, I mean, I guess I think most of the women in the match aren't as kind of versed in spot and, you know, and weaponry based offense. And just, yeah, it's everyone's first night back. And, you know, they probably didn't know who was winning the bloody thing until a few days before, a few hours before even. I guess I'm forgiving of it for, you know, two, because like you say, I really liked the winner. I think that's great. I like the closing spot. It's great.
Yeah.
Just scamper really, up and really just good. Grab it. Just grab it. Why not? Just do it. Oh, God, I got it.
Yeah, so all seven of them, apart from Alexa, who'd been buried under ladders, were all up on top of the ladders, like fighting each other over it. So Nikki essentially just snuck in there and got the briefcase while they were all like fighting amongst each other. So all of a sudden, when she drops down with the briefcase, they're all up on the ladders being like, I took my eye off the prize for a second. Just for a split second, and that's how Nikki got the briefcase. And I'm so in for Nikki Cross, or Nikki ASH, having the briefcase. I think it's a really fun character to put it on. She's someone who thinks she's almost a superhero. So now she's got a briefcase that gives her a title match, but does she truly believe that she's ready for that spot yet? So there's a really nice story that you can tell with that. And then, you know, maybe she'll cash it in ahead of time. Maybe she'll cash it in and use it as a heel turn. And like, that's it. So you're just like, screw it. I am a superhero now, and I'm a super villain. Like, there's some like fun stuff that you can do with this. I'm looking forward to the future of Nikki ASH with the briefcase.
Yeah. And like, Liv got a couple of really nice moments. Naomi, literally like everyone except Natalia and maybe Tamina, you know, got their moments in the sun. Yeah. Like, I can understand people being just like, well, that match wasn't, It wasn't as well executed as the men's. Yeah, you're right. But it was first match back on a pay-per-view in front of a capacity crowd. It's like, lads, if it genuinely upset you, that moment with that crowd at this time, after everything that everyone's been through, if the idea that a couple of botches in a multi-women ladder match upset you, get your life sorted. Your priorities are out of whack, my son.
I think there are certain people in the wrestling fandom that just want things to be crap. You know, like when they announced the first Women's Royal Rumble, like I'd just started working at WrestleTalk at that point, and we had a lot of people who messaged being like, it's going to be a train wreck because they can't do a Royal Rumble. Like, they haven't got 30 women. It's going to be awful. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. It's going to be that. And then when the match happened and it was really quite good, those people who wanted it to be bad were just focusing on the stuff that didn't work. And be like, told you it was bad. I told you this thing would work. It's the same with like people who hate AEW and they just want the company to fail. So any like slight mistake they'll make, they'll just measure it. I told you they were crap. I told you they were never good. And so just sort of laser focusing in on certain things that they don't think work. And yeah, it's not really my form of argument, unfortunately. I think if that's, like you say, that's your ideal, probably just find another fandom, really. Find something else to get angry about.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I'm not going to tell anyone like you should like this or you're wrong for not liking it. It's just I'm like I say, I can't personally comprehend the idea of walking away from that match and being upset. But like what you know, I thought everyone came out of it. I think the division is a better off place, I think, for having that match generally. Mm-hmm.
The tag team titles on the Raw side of things were on the line next, with AJ and Omos retaining over the Viking Raiders. This match went way longer than I ever thought it would. It followed the formula that I would expect, which is just, you know, AJ does all the work. He gets worked over and does hot tags. And then Omos just comes in and does big moves and looks really tall doing it.
Yeah, it felt like a reset for the Raiders. Like, I think AJ and Omos are like, you know what that. You know what that tag team is. That is a feud waiting to happen. And it's like everyone's almost kind of like clock watching, being like, when's the feud going to happen? Whereas the Viking Raiders are a tag team. We're not looking for a feud there. We'd really just like them to be a tag team again after the... if you talk about silly bollocks, the bollocks that I really don't like was their crap against Street Profits. I thought that did almost irreparable damage to the Viking Raiders. But it just goes to show, if they can have a couple more matches like this, this is the closest we've got to NXT Raiders, I think.
Yeah. I cannot believe they recapped all of that stuff. Like, the show felt like WWE knew that they were going to have a lot of fans returning, not just in terms of people in the building, but people actually watching the show, because, you know, they've seen people tune out during the pandemic era. Like, TV ratings have fallen through the floor, network viewing figures have fallen through the floor as well. So I think they kind of expected a lot of like returning fans for the show, because there were so many recap packages of things that have happened previously, things that have happened in the past year. So it's like returning fans and new fans coming into this.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe they recapped the Viking Raiders Street Profits feud. Of all the stuff to recap,
bury it,
pretend it never happened. When they showed those doofuses going bowling together, I was like, no, was all the bad. This was the bad stuff.
Awful. But like you say, I one of the things I was really thankful of this match, like you say, it went longer than anyone expected, but I was really expecting it to be essentially an extended angle where the story, the front and center story, is AJ Styles and Omos with Viking Raiders as the sort of, you know, tag team A that we put in here in order to tell this story with the actual characters. But I think the Viking Raiders played a much bigger part and had much more of an identity than anyone thought. And I think that can only be a huge positive. And yeah, and I think once the fans realized, oh, wait, this is an actual match, I think they actually got really into the second half. A couple of really good falsies in there.
Yeah, it was fun as well. Like, you know, with live crowd, you can't get those Thunderdome piped in reactions. This crowd was so into AJ Styles. You know, the heel AJ Styles. Cocky heel that people are supposed to hate AJ Styles. And I was going, AJ Styles. And like, you know, chanting it for him against the Viking Raiders. So it's lovely having fans back. So here is the WWE Championship match. Bobby Lashley versus Kofi Kingston. This match went 7.5 minutes. 455 seconds, so it is longer than the Brock Lesnar match. We thought they were going to go the Daniel Bryan Brock Lesnar route from Survivor Series, where like the bigger guy dominates, the smaller guy gets a brief flurry, and then the bigger guy wins. What actually happened is that Kofi got a bit of a flurry at the start, then Bobbles just murdered him. and then continued to murder him, brought him back to life, murdered him some more, and then made him tap out to the Hurt Lock to get the win. This was a 7.5 minute squash match.
Yeah. And it was horrible as well. Because it wasn't about the moves. It was about the fact it was Kofi. And WWE, I almost can't believe I'm kind of giving them the credit, but I think they knew what this looked like. I think they knew that it was that a lot of fans were going to be crying burial. Because they knew they'd done this before. And this does fit in with Brock's storyline. Like, this is this is now forming part of the context of Kofi Kingston. Because hopefully there is another world title reign in Kofi before he retires. And I think this now being part of that, I think that makes that inevitable thing, if it comes, is going to be way more kind of like, you know, overcoming your past sort of thing. But like you say, I really feel like this is here to put the heat under Big E, or at least it really should be, because it was cruel. And I hated watching Bobby do this. And I think I said this in the stream, but Bobby's never cut as strong a promo as this, and he did it without saying a word.
Yeah, and that's back to back as well, because the promo he cut on Monday's Raw was like the best promo that he's done in WWE since he came back. And it was like, that's the Bobby that we've been waiting for. And this Bobby right here, this is the Bobby that we've also been waiting for. Just this absolutely murderous man. And he looked awesome doing it. This match was about getting Bobby over, presumably because we expect Goldberg to be back tonight. And they want to make Bobby look strong, because you've got the big brick wall in Goldberg coming back. You know, so you're going to have these two unstoppable things going against each other. So I totally get it from that aspect. But also, like, I hate the argument, oh, just let it play out. Because oftentimes you can see that the writing on the wall, this is going to be crap, but I'm being told by that I just need to wait, I need to wait this out and see how it goes. This is one of the few times where I think that is applicable. I don't think that you can call, I don't want to call this a burial. I don't want to say that they did Kofi dirty. I think this is one of those times where I was like, I'm super excited to tune into Raw tonight, because I want to see what happens with Kofi next. I'd imagine he's not going to be on the show, because you want to be selling the beatdown that he's taken here. I really hope that he's not wrestling on the show, but I want to see what's next in his story. So that, from, you know, in that sense, the kind of the match was a success for me.
I think I understand fans who don't have that patience with WWE. I really do. Like, WWE do this a lot. Where, like, the Brock Lesnar squash was not the beginning. It wasn't the beginning of a long road back to the title for Kofi. At least, you know, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. They might retcon it was later.
Back to the tag team division with you, sir.
Yeah. So I get it. I really get people who love Kofi and maybe don't have an emotional connection to Bobby Lashley. And I can imagine, I understand people getting pissed off. I really do. But I think WWE sort of knew the anger they were courting there. And I think this time it does feel intentional, just because how crumpled and broken Kofi was. And they know that people really liked Kofi. Like, they're not completely oblivious, and they know, like, they heard Kofi's pop. Like, I think they knew that kind of, like, well, he's going to be one of those guys when the fans come back, you know, after, you know, so much time away, that he was going to be super beloved. And yeah, he was the sacrificial lamb tonight, but that is a key storytelling trope.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not necessarily Kofi's story right now, but his part in it is integral. And I really hope it's Big E's story. I hope it's not Goldberg's.
And I would like to add here, I hope this is the case. I hope that, like, in a few months, like a few weeks time, I'm going to be sat here eating my words, being like, nope, turns out it was just a squash match. And they just totally buried him. And he's just back to the tag team division with you. And there's actually no direction for this whatsoever. I hope that that's not the case. And the other divisive match, I think, from this card was the Charlotte Flair Rhea Ripley match. I thought these two really showed how great they are in this match, because they have had the suckiest of suck feuds. This has been a wet fart of a feud between two awful characters who aren't likable in the least, but the company seems to think that one of them at least is likable. And the feud has been so bad that when this match started, the crowd chanted for Becky Lynch, because they wanted anything other than what was going on in the ring. However, Flair and Ripley are so great together, and they're so good individually, that they got, they moved like from "We want Becky" chant to a light "This is awesome" chant to a thunderous "This is awesome" chant. They totally turned this crowd around, got them back on their side, and had, and I mean, outside of the ladder matches, easily match of the night.
Cannot believe that Rhea wasn't face going into this. If this is how they're going to book the ending, I don't get it.
She is a babyface.
But is she?
Well, no, she is. So because, well, yes, but they think that she is a babyface, like, because they've been asking the Thunderdome crowd to cheer for her. So she is now definitely, she's been teaming with babyfaces on the roster as well. So she is, they think she's the babyface in this feud. She is no babyface.
Well, I think when you are, when the angles are stripped away and it's just in terms of the match, she wrestled this match from about halfway on to the end like the babyface, and I, that was much more convincing. Like that, the finish I thought was excellent. I'm sure we'll get to that, but like you say, yeah, the story of the match was two amazing talents completely underserved by a terrible feud, and yeah, just a testament to how good both women are that they were able to have the crowd in the palm of their hands. And just, oh, it makes you feel optimistic for the future. It makes you feel optimistic that no matter how badly WWE can book people, as long as they've just got the time on the pay-per-views, they can do it. They can bring the crowd back. And I'm sure, yeah, like, this was a crowd that was, it was a boisterous crowd. I think they wanted to see a good match more, you know. I they chanted for Becky, but I think you know, they're not looking to be bored. I think they wanted to see a good match, especially on this night. And yeah, I loved it. Second best match of the night for me, and it was close, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is, we've been saying this on the podcast now for about a year or so. This company hasn't been interested in the Raw Women's Championship pretty much since Asuka had the belt. Like, they cared about it. Yeah, since Becky left, like, they cared about it a little bit because they really liked Banks and Bayley together. And so, like, when Banks and Bayley were involved, they were actually like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll put some focus on this belt now. But as soon as they were not a factor in the Women's Championship anymore, then they just sort of forgot that Asuka had it. Like, Asuka had it for ages and was not wrestling, didn't have a feud. She was in a tag team with Charlotte. And then they gave it to Rhea, and they still haven't cared about it. Now that Charlotte has got the belt, I feel like now they're actually going to put some attention back into this belt and make it feel like it's worth something again. And perhaps that's because Becky's coming back. And we don't know, but, like, you know, the
feels like it.
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? It feels like Becky's coming back. So now they need to put the belt on an actual star because they've got a star coming back to face for us.
Yeah, it wasn't quite cheating what Charlotte did. It was, yeah, she was opportunistic and she used the environment, but the environment's there. And, you know, as Ra's al Ghul would say in Batman Begins, always be mindful of your surroundings. And so I think this does feel like sort of the end of Rhea's time. I do think SummerSlam, it sucks because Rhea's so great, as we saw from this match. And she does deserve, I think, to still be in title contention. But SummerSlam, Charlotte versus Becky, like, Charlotte as the actual heel and Becky as the returning face. Yeah, that's for me.
It's bigger than anything else they've got. And, you know, which is sad to say, because that means they've spent the last year not building anything. The finish of this match saw Charlotte Flair trap Rhea Ripley. Like, first off, she did a top rope natural selection, which was rad. Like, I think a lot of people thought that was going to be the finish. It was a really good kick out. And then Charlotte got Rhea's leg in between the steps of the ring steps and the ring apron and drop kicked it, locked in the figure eight for the win. I've seen a few people message that, why was Rhea Ripley's a DQ last month when she flipped up the announcers, the plastic bit on the announcers table a DQ? But this wasn't a DQ.
That's a criticism of that match, not this match.
That's what I would say as well. Like, yeah, you're right. It shouldn't have been a DQ first time round. Like, it was a terrible finish at Backlash. Should never have been a DQ. Or was it Hell in a Cell? Whichever one it was. That shouldn't have been a DQ. So that is on the fault of that match. So I didn't actually have a problem with the finish of this whatsoever. It just it doesn't make any sense because the other one didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's full of holes. It really, really is. But the match quality's up there. Rhea will come back from this. She's still insanely young. Never forget that. Obviously, they're building up Charlotte to have as many titles as her dad, which, you know, this is another step in that direction. Becky's probably going to get it back at SummerSlam if they do wrestle for it. Or maybe Rhea and Charlotte will do a kind of rubber match there, and maybe Becky won't come back because Becky just keeps teasing it. And eventually it'll going to be Boy That Cried Wolf and she'll come back.
You say it's a rubber match, but Rhea Ripley is 0-3 against Charlotte Flair in matches.
Yes. A rubber match is the wrong term. Maybe just like a redemption match then.
Yeah, okay, that's much better. Yeah. Then we had the men's Money in the Bank ladder match that we've already talked about. And our main event was Roman Reigns versus Edge for the Blue Universal Championship. So this was Roman's match style that he does now. It's like an Okada match. The first 20 minutes are the slow, methodical building to go into that final third. And it is... I used to see a lot of people were very critical of Okada matches because, like, well, you don't need to watch the first 20 minutes, really. But I think the first 20 minutes build to what happens in the final 20 minutes. And I think that's the same with Roman matches. However, I can see the argument behind Sloman Reigns and his slow matches, lots of chatting, lots of rest holds and this, that, and the other, because this felt every bit of its 33 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm probably not going to watch this match ever again, which is not necessarily a huge criticism. I just think this was quite exposing of Edge, I would say, rather than Roman, because Roman's matches with them indie lads, you're right, did have, you know, a lot of, you know, 10 minutes of slow beatdowns, headlocks, and Roman going.
Yeah.
Like for ages, but then it does heat up and it really, really gets to that kind of moment, and it didn't quite get there with this. And I'm not sure if that was because Edge was tired or literally just because they had a bunch of stuff they wanted to book, and I think this match was overbooked. I still liked it because I really like Roman. I thought it was a spectacle for him. I think the crowd really wanted to get behind Edge. I feel like the match underserved them in terms of stuff they could actually get behind and chant for. I feel like, especially in like the first 10 minutes, I think the fans were like, I really want to cheer about something, but you're not giving me a whole lot to cheer about because the character stuff can be quite subtle. You know, it doesn't give you a, you know, it's not like playing to the crowd as much as some people do. It did heat up, but not, I'd say, a huge, huge amount. And then Seth ran in and Charles Robinson and the least convincing ref bump I think we've seen in years, like stuff to the gills. This match was, and not in it was full of a lot of booking, but not necessarily a lot of booking that made you kind of leave your chair and get emotional.
I would agree with that. Like the rest hold spot, like when Roman had him in a headlock, went on forever. And I get what they were going for. They were trying to do that whole, like, you really kill the crowd down. And once you've killed the crowd down, the crowd almost organically build themselves back up, because they'll be like, they'll realize they're in the lull. So they'll pick themselves back up. And that's when you do the next bit of it. But they waited, I think, a little bit too long on that. So what we essentially just watched was Roman Reigns put Edge in a headlock forever, a long old time he had him in there. And I think a lot of that kind of kills the flow of the match. But you're right, like the final 10 minutes were really, really good. Like when it was just a bit more fast-paced and a bit more boom, boom, boom. The ref bump was hilariously crap because Charles Robinson barely got nicked and he went down like a sack of spuds and like just hit the deck. And it was, medical staff ran down. It raised the massive question of, why wasn't a second ref sent out? Why did it take them 7 minutes to send out a second referee? Like, you got 50 of them. Like, just send one of them out. Like, Jessica's in the back. She's not doing outs. Just, you know, send her down. And there was a lot of, like, holes within this, just so they could allow Seth to get in and do his interference and all this sort of stuff, and do the stuff with the chair, that bit of the chair that the Edge bloody loves, where he takes it off the chair and puts it in people's mouths and whatnot. It's like, well, we want to do those spots where we can't have a ref there, so let's take the referee out and then just not have one for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So I totally get those criticisms of the match as well, but you know, I did enjoy it. But like you, I don't think I'm going to watch it again.
I think I enjoyed it. Like, I was incredibly compelled by it because obviously we do predictions with wrestling, and when something's on the line, wrestling is a lot more compelling. I can understand people being less compelled because a lot of people, I think, thought it was a foregone conclusion, but there was something in the air. Like, I think knowing that Edge isn't going to win it, going back, I think will kill this match on a rewatch. I think the idea that it's the first night back with fans really did make it feel like, well, something could happen, which is why when the Usos ran in and their run-in was cut off by Mysterio and Son, it was like, and like people allowed themselves to kind of believe, allowed their heart rates to quicken, and knowing that's not coming, I think will make this match quite a boring rewatch, to be honest. But it's tricky, man. They haven't done a pay-per-view main event in a year and a half. You know, you can cut you can some slack. They haven't really done one of the, I mean, you could argue obviously they did WrestleMania 37, but you know, they haven't done a one-on-one pay-per-view like singles match in this Roman Reigns style in front of fans like for a very long time. And it doesn't excuse all that, like you say, the holes in the booking, but I think the ceremony and the occasion elevated what is actually quite a mediocre match. I think was elevated by the occasion and the possibilities and the doubt that I think people had in their mind, especially with Seth saying I've got next, because we know he's fighting Edge at SummerSlam. So him saying that did more for the match than anything did.
But it wasn't the end of the show. Seth and Edge brawled, and then they brawled to the back. And then Roman Reigns is cutting a promo, and who should interrupt him but Wabadu, Vin Diesel's brother, John Cena, made his WWE return. Now, I scroll through comments, you know, because we reply to comments on these videos. It's good for YouTube interactive stuff. The algorithm likes it, this and the other. And it's good to go and get feedback from viewers and stuff. There were a handful of people that were very upset at us on last night's live stream reaction because we didn't mark out enough for John Cena. And we've had this before, in fact. You know, when like a couple of years ago when Cena came back as the Thugonomics John Cena at WrestleMania?
Mm.
And it was me, Ollie, and Laurie watching it in the studio together. And we all just went, yeah, okay, cool. Like,
smile rather than.
And like, and people got so mad at us for not enjoying it because like they loved Thugonomics John Cena. And like my argument was, A, I wasn't watching wrestling when Thugonomics John Cena was around. And B, I thought it was proper lame. Like, it was one of the things that made me not want to watch. I was like, this is proper crap, this. This is why I'm not watching wrestling. And I didn't like it. It made sense when it was a heel, because they're like, oh, right, because he's bad at rapping. And that's the gimmick. He's bad at raps, and that's where the heat comes from. And then it was a babyface. It's like, well, now he's just bad. He just does bad rhymes and just talks about his dick a lot. Like, I'm not going to cheer this man with his US title spinner belt. So And then, you know, when I was watching wrestling, I got back into wrestling. I'm in my 20s and I'm in the John Cena sucks crowd because I thought he was a bit pants. So I don't have that childhood nostalgia for him. So when he came back, it was just a case of, yeah, Cena's back. Because of course he's back. He hasn't been gone that long. Like, it's been about a year. It's not like this was it wasn't like CM Punk came back or anything. It was like this ginormous return. It's just, yeah, Cena's back. Because of course he's back.
Also, we knew he was coming back. Like, it was either going to be tonight or SmackDown. It's a coin flip, and you know, why not do it in front of fans?
Coming back.
Yeah, he said he was coming back. We know it's happening at SummerSlam, and like, it was 4:30 in the morning. no, like I'm happy to see Cena the new. I think because I think he has had like so many great wrestlers' best match has been against John Cena. You know, like he's a big fight feel. I think he'll do a lot better against Roman than Edge did. Lights are on bright. I'm super stoked to see him back. I can't wait to see the match. I think it's gonna be a really, really fun match to watch. And I'm really happy that the pop happened. I feel, considering the hard work that Cena has done, especially since 2015, when he sort of reinvented himself as a kind of a dark horse workhorse, he deserves that kind of Austin level pop, and it was huge pop, and I'm very, very happy for the lad. But you know, we were tired and we thought it was probably going to happen anyway. So sorry we didn't push our computers over.
Because I know that people got really excited to see him back. And that's really good. Like, and I think the match he's going to have with Roman at SummerSlam is going to slap hard. Like, I think that's going to be...
Look at you, TikTok. You did it. Nice. Well done for you. Well done on you.
Bougie in that. I think it is going to be an awesome match. Like, I've one of those people that proper turned the corner on Cena in that 2015 US title, US Open title run. Like, that was when I was like, oh, actually, yeah, the lad in the jorts is all right, to be honest. Mm. And, you know, the wababadoo is fun to sort of make fun of in that. And like, so I love him as a film star as well. So I proper turned a corner. Also, as I said in last night's stream, one of the nicest lads I've ever interviewed. So I'm super excited that he's back. It's just, for me, it was not like the all-time great return that I think, like, people are just like today acting like this was like the biggest thing on the show. And for me, this was like probably the third biggest thing on the show. Mm. And that's cool. Like, it's, I saw someone today, like, Cena is like one of the all-time greats and is greater than the greats that came before him. I'm like, whoa, let's pump the brakes a little bit there. Is that right? Like,
I get WWE pushing that angle. Cause...
No, this is a fan. This was sat.
Oh, fine, you know, like, fine, you know, but like WWE, you know, obviously they like, and that pop, you know, they immediately after the show posted that pop to Twitter. It was all over Twitter. And it was genuinely nice to see everyone quote tweeting it with their favorite memories of John Cena and how happy they are to see him back. Because obviously we work with a few, like a lot of younger fans, a lot of younger journalists, I would say, like people in their early to mid 20s. And I think John Cena does mean something different for those guys. Exactly. John Cena probably has been better for them for longer. You know, like the majority of their memories of John Cena are, well, good stuff, not 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, like the real dark times. But yeah, John Cena, yeah, I can understand John Cena being pushed as the only news story to come out of this, because please watch wrestling again, WWE is shouting into yeah. there.
He's a film star. He's in like two big films that are out at the moment. Come watch our product again. So yeah, I thought it's pretty cool. I think it's probably a lot like when The Rock came back for the Cena fuse. Like, I think that there were fans like us who were, you know, we were kids when The Rock was on the ascent. So we were like, oh man, this is brilliant. The Rock's back. But there would have been the kids that were like, I don't know who this guy is. Who's this old man? Like, I want to cheer the lad in the jorts. So yeah, I totally get it. You know, now that people are a bit older, they're like, this was my favorite guy when I was a kid. And now I get to see him again. And that's awesome. So that's pretty rad. Overall, I thoroughly enjoyed this show. Like, I gave it 5 out of 5. In the review, because I was like, well, there wasn't a bad thing on the card, so I how can you not give it 5 out of 5? What about
it's
you?
Different show as well. Like, it's like night one of WrestleMania. It means something else to see this many people come together, and there's sentimentality underpinning it. But that's life, and WWE and wrestling is a very emotion centric product, and I think the overarching emotion from the crowd, from us watching, from generally everything, is just like partway relief, part joy, and part surprise. You know, it's like, wrestling is back. They put over some people that we didn't think they would necessarily. Cena's back to have a really great match. Yeah, like a whole bunch of really nice wrestling happened. And oh my God, I've missed fans. You know, safety precautions to one side, you know, in a hypothetical, in a perfect world where no ill comes from having capacity fans back, it's a different product. It is night and day to what, really, like, is. Comparing this to Hell in a Cell last month, it is night and day. Like you said, it's like a light switch has been turned on in the dark room. It is so different and so much more overwhelming, so much more kind of sensational, and just, it feels like an alive like product again, because the fans are chanting for who they care about, and actually, like, people really hearing how much people care about Big E, not yeah. the piped in Thunderdome like fake cheers, the actual cheers from actual people who are really happy that Big E's getting it. It's yeah, yeah. Wonderful stuff.
The last few months where WWE essentially stopped like, you know, they were putting on shows, but they just stopped. Raw had stopped. And I feel like pay-per-views had stopped as well, because they were just repeats of what they had done previously. And I think SmackDown was in the similar boat. And, you know, the polls that we've been doing reflect that. People are like, I'm done with this show. Like, I'm bored. Like, this is not a good show. And it was a lot, you know, always in the lower half of the, you know, out of five category. You compare that to what SmackDown got this past Friday. Everyone was so into it. And you compare that to here. Look at this, 53% great per view, 4 out of 5. 28% that it was a 5 out of 5 show. Like, the lower half of this is so much smaller because they are just really into this. So I'm curious to see what reaction Raw gets. Bearing in mind that Raw has been consistently terrible this year. I'm so excited to see what the reaction is going to be tomorrow, by when we review it tomorrow.
I think it's good. I'm hoping for the best because we're essentially on the road to WrestleMania now.
Yeah. And Cena's opening the show. Like, they are looking to get a big, big bump in ratings. They've like Cena, although he's on SmackDown, he's opening Raw. Like, he is.
As he should.
Let's get into the rest of your Ultra Chats. If you want to get them in, ding, ding, ding. This is your last call. It is wrestletalk.com/support. We will be reading out all of them above the $5 mark. Chris Varano says, was there live last night. Watching Charlotte Rhea turn that crowd was amazing. Kudos to those two amazing women. And the pop for Cena's return is one of the loudest reactions I've ever heard live. Roberto, this is from last night's stream, said, John Cena's guile haircut for his upcoming role in Street Fighter. Yeah, I mean, it was Andy Datson texted us, and I had the similar thought as well. He proper looks like Chris Packham. You know, he's just like, Spring Watch is over, and he's now going to go do a wrestling.
I didn't have the heart to tell Andy that I've got no idea who Chris Packham is.
Oh, do you not watch Spring Watch?
No.
Oh, mate, you should.
What is it?
Spring Watch, basically, it's two people, it's two BBC presenters, and they just have like hidden cameras around like gardens and stuff, and just show you what like happens during spring and like all the animals and stuff, like, you know, a family of voles who are like, you know, doing vole stuff, you know, here's some badgers and that sort of gubbins.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, if you say so, pal.
He presents it with Michaela Strachan. Adrian Strupp says, Riddle flew under the radar, but was low-key my favorite part of the ladder match. His reaction to Rick's flip was great, and I popped for every RKO he delivered. Also, was way more excited to see Beige win than for John Cena. Kevin said, Smithers, are they booing me? No, sir. I think they're saying Drew. Are you saying boo or Drew?
Let's everyone be careful. Drew's great. Drew is a good baby face. He is just like, yeah, WWE. He doesn't book himself to be in the main event of every single, like in the WWE title shot of every single show. Drew's great. Let's just not. Fans really love a narrative. They love a snowballing narrative of backlash against certain figures because they feel like we're WWE shoving down our throat. Please let's chill out with Drew hate. He's proper brilliant.
Proper great. I actually asked this last night, but I didn't get an answer from you. Did you ever book Drew in a ladder match?
No, we didn't. We booked him in a Royal Rumble, basically. Almost a kind of a one-man Royal Rumble. but no, we did not.
Joe Strikes, from where I was in the live audience, the crowd did not care about Rhea Ripley at all. Charlotte did her best to put her over as the champion, but Ripley felt not even in the same league. That KO backflip, OMG, and love to see Nikki win Money in the Bank. Bacon Rash said, hi lads, I like Beige, but comedy face characters winning Money in the Bank again didn't work well for Otis. I do prefer it when a heel wins, as cash-ins can come from anywhere. For me, it just doesn't seem to work with a baby face having the briefcase in going by past winners. Jam that jam.
I've outlined what my booking would be for Nikki. I think she can absolutely, like, getting her confidence up to do it, I think works. Big E, I agree. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for him to be, hoo-hoo-hoo, got it. I want to see him cash in on Bobby immediately.
CJ Lilly, hi guys, I really enjoyed the show last night, especially the Alexa reception, as all I heard before is that she'll be booed out of the building. That didn't happen. She looked great in the match. She looked so strong, they gave her the big show burial spot. Anthony Velasquez said, I think Liv should have won the Money in the Bank briefcase. My only worry with Nikki having the briefcase with the gimmick is that she has in WWE might make it a comedy prop like they did with Otis last year. I can see Nikki having a failed cash-in. Kind of works for Nikki to have a failed cash-in, though, because maybe she did it too early, because she's not an actual superhero, she's almost. So she cashes in too early. That's a lesson learned for her, and I think that's quite a nice bit of character development. Sam Mort said, I'm with you guys on leaving the New Day together. However, if one was to turn, I'd rather Big E wins the title and Kofi gets jealous. I think he'd be a more effective heel than Big E. Although I hope Nikki isn't in a notice situation with the briefcase. I mean, I ain't turning any of them heel. Please, no.
Don't do it. Let the friendship live. Let it be the one great wrestling friendship that never, ever, ever comes asunder.
Luke Thomas, all right, lads, I'm a massive John Cena mark, so nothing could have spoiled his return, but good God, Michael Cole tried his best. Thought this was a brilliant show. Delighted for Big E. I'm really interested to see where they go with this angle next. I've seen a few people really dunk on Michael Cole for his call.
Really? I thought Michael Cole's call was really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed...
It didn't sound scripted. Where? That was really, really good. But now, like, John, like, Michael Cole's voice sliding up six octaves, like, he sounded genuinely blown away. Like, don't get me wrong, like, For the Love of Mankind is terrible, but it didn't sound... I'm kind of shocked by that.
Ryan says, last night was incredible. What a pay-per-view. Want to thank Adam for your constant entertainment since 2015. The Deckard Dane said, must admit, got a little emotional seeing Big E win the briefcase. I hope it's a sign of better things to come in WWE. Great pay-per-view last night. Solid wrestling, a superb men's Money in the Bank, and amazing scenes with the return of Cena. Bring on SummerSlam. It's nice to see people excited about wrestling. Matthew Robinson said, hi, guys. Wow, love your live reactions last night. I think this is the best show of the year for WWE. Probably the best Money in the Bank match. Gotta love Beige. I really hope the plan is for him to go after Bobby since what happened to Kofi. Do you think there's a chance that he stays on SmackDown to go after Roman? Maybe New Day first Uso family war. What are your thoughts?
Maybe. I think there's rumors, obviously, of a post-SummerSlam draft or a shakeup. And I think if New Day came over to SmackDown, I wouldn't be against it, because New Day versus the Bloodline could be a really great faction feud. Like, really, really good. And, you know, Roman is kind of slowly running out of challenges. So yep. I don't think it has to be Bobby, but it just feels like there's lots of storytelling left on the table for Big E versus Lashley.
Killface EXW says, OMG, the men's Money in the Bank was the best I've ever seen. Congrats to Big E. And I knew the moment Drew lost was the moment that he didn't take the sword out to the ring. In all seriousness, good performances from everyone in that match. Have a great day. Devante Lee said, Big E has always said his dream match is Goldberg, so I'd be totally okay with Goldberg, Bobby, and Big E match at SummerSlam for the title. Give him his dream match and the title. It would be beautiful. I do feel that a lot of people say, like, it's his dream match. I do feel like he was trolling people when he said that was his dream match.
I don't know, maybe. Like, you know, when did Big E grow up, you know?
Yeah, but the way he talks about the match, Adam, it doesn't sound like it's a super serious, like, that's a dream match. He's just like, oh, man, can you imagine the big meaty men slapping meat with each other?
Oh, okay. I haven't seen this tweet or this interview or what it is.
It was on the podcast, I think. And, like, Xavier Woods is killing himself laughing while Big E is talking about the meaty men slapping each other's meat. Cool. Brandon says, went to Money in the Bank. It was my first live show with friends. Match of the night for me was the men's Money in the Bank. Big ending off the ladder was so awesome. So happy for Big E. Oof, that looked like it sucked to take from both ends.
Yeah, like, just Big E, get a finishing move that isn't someone landing on your bloody shoulder, mate.
It's bad enough that you keep diving onto it when you're just falling out the rink.
Oh, my God.
Dylan Haggart, seeing Cena's return was such a great moment. His promo after the show went off the air, was great. He's not being told he sucks anymore because people have realized how good he was and is. Utes says, yep, guy on the right was absolutely right. Roman versus Edge kind of exposed Edge's weakness more than anything. Roman probably had to pace the match in accordance to Edge's pace. Isn't a knock on Edge. It's one of the greatest things, but that is an age thing. And Dylan said, where do the women's and men's Money in the Bank matches fall into the best ever? I think I'd have to look at them all side by side, but, like, yeah, I think it's kind of recency bias at the moment, but man alive, I loved that match.
I can't think of a better match right off the top of my head. I can't. I can think of maybe, like, individual moments, like Shelton running up the ladder for the first time, like, is insane. But in terms of a match, like, it, where I was, like you say, you didn't write any notes for it.
Alexa,
yeah, it started hot and kept going.
Alexander Renaissance said, after all these years, Roman still looks like he can't outmatch Big John in anything. Standing there in the ring thinking, why can't anyone acknowledge me like they acknowledge him? Declan Malloy, David Flair needs to come back and manage Charlotte Flair so they can be Chaz and Dave.
That took me by surprise. I really like that.
CJ Lilly, me again. I think they've we've actually established.
Do you want to explain who Chaz and Dave is to our
not.
American?
No, no, absolutely not. No, I mean, I think it's best to leave as it is. Rabbit, rabbit. I think we've established a few rules for Alexa's powers. She has to maintain eye contact with the person, object, as we saw last night and a few weeks before. If someone interrupts her, the effect stops straight away. Where do you think she goes next? I think she feuds with Eva Marie. That's what they set up on last week's Raw.
Yeah.
Ex Machina, could Rhea versus Nikki be a good angle to go after this? Nikki aspiring to be a superhero versus Rhea, having absorbed the worst anti-hero lessons from the feud with Charlotte. Focus has always been on bad booking of the Raw Women's title, but non-title feuds are where WWE really fails.
Maybe. I don't think that's always true. Like Otis and Mandy and Dolph and Sonya Deville, like, had one of the best book feuds in years.
I think what Ex Machina was saying specifically was in the women's division. Like, the WWE are very bad at doing secondary feuds.
Mandy versus Sonya, though. Like, I didn't have a title involved. And don't get me wrong, that's an exception. It's an exception to prove the rule. Yes, you're absolutely right. But, you know, like, Dana and Mandy versus Nia Jax and Shayna.
Eamon McDivitt said, hi guys, great work as always. Fantasy booking, Sasha wins back the title as a heel and goes on a good run. She cuts a promo on how there's no one else to beat. The old Bailey returns and challenges her at WrestleMania. Thoughts?
When Bailey comes back, I think it's going to be huge. Because the story of Bailey being so great in the pandemic and not getting that moment in front of fans, heartbreaking. Really, really heartbreaking. But I think when she finally laces up her boots and probably does return as a face, she doesn't have to put the ponytail up. But when she finally steps back in the ring, I think it's going to be proper thunderous for Bailey.
I would almost do it as like a Mankind Cactus Jack kind of thing. Where it's like, you're right, I can't beat you, but I know someone who can. She takes off the wig to reveal she's actually got long hair. She's that tiny.
The tube men just kind of explode from.
Stephen said, thank God for the Big E win. Question, what are your favorite matches and moments that lend the story? Mine is being Omega Ricardo 2 when Kenny collapses from pure exhaustion as Ricardo goes for the Rainmaker. It's just perfect. Thank you as always, my dudes. Jam that jam.
I don't quite understand the question.
That lends to the story. Favorite match moments that lends to the story. Like, I mean, I do love that Kenny exhaustion spot. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, I think the kind of, it's like Sammy and Kevin, their first match in NXT on TakeOver was like proper wonderful. I think the stuff with Kofi and Bobby, like, if you're just talking about like literally like little moments of physicality that really, Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar, like horrible moments, like him landing on his head and just like selling where he looks like he's really, really hurt and glassy eyed. These things that kind of aren't necessarily specific spots, but they're isolated moments that just draw you in and make you afraid. I guess moments like those.
Kamal Arif says, Big E has the Money in the Bank briefcase, Roman versus Cena, Hangman versus Kenny. What a time to be a wrestling fan. Also, legend says that Charles Robinson is still selling his knee. Nate S. Luke, would you rather jam it in on Pete or Laurie? Are you planning to jam it in at Summer Jam, the jammiest show of the summer?
Big question.
And I'm not going to reveal any of my plans with the jam in the jar. I've, you know, I will pick my moments. Let's just say that.
Question: does the Jam the Jar have an expiry date?
I would have thought so, probably till the next Money in the Bank.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I've got to, I can hold it for a little while. Will Campbell said, quick shout out to Adam for getting me into WrestleTalk in the first place when I randomly found one of his lists. Also, when Money in the Bank off the air, I immediately went back to the start of the men's ladder match to rewatch it. It was that great. Charles Berg says, hi, Adam. Sorry, I thought that was all in good fun in terms of the Toriano thing.
It is. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
I'll call you Adam. You deserve a good nickname. I'm only good at picking bad nicknames. Anyways, I hope anyone who likes JRPGs to play Yakuza like a dragon. It's really fun. WTVS said, I see Lucas turned babyface finally. He's being a lot more positive about WWE today. It's because it's fucking good for a change. Like, it's easy to be positive about a show when it's good. Like, it's not hard.
I don't think he is a full babyface, though. He's the one to hold on to this Jam in the Jar for a while. Why don't you challenge Pete at SummerSlam? Make it a triple threat. You know, do it. Well, do it now.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it right now. If I'm going to challenge Pete, I want him to be on the stream with us at the very least.
No, do it while I'm here.
I want him to know that I'm jamming it in. Dylan Russell said, a longtime fan, can I get a shout out to my band Wolves of Oz? We mix D-Gent new metal with R&B pop, like early Linkin Park and Michael Jackson had a baby. Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter, Wolves of Oz. Thank you, appreciate it. You had me at new metal, you kind of lost me at some of the other stuff. Because, I mean, I don't say I'm listening to a podcast about new metal now. It's my new favorite podcast.
What's it called?
POD Cast. Which is very good. It's very clever. And yeah, it's just two guys and they pick an album every month and just talk about it. And it's wonderful. It's two guys who are in their 30s who can't let new metal go. Just like me.
I also appreciate the themes of this album. Like, I didn't want to clean my bedroom at the time, and I still don't want to clean my bedroom.
I was talking to my wife about this, like, because Korn's first album, like, Jonathan Davis has got a song in there at the end where he's like, because he was abused as a child by like his family members and stuff. He had like a terrible, terrible childhood, and he sings about it, like, he cries during these songs, like, it's an emotional thing. And I'm there with my wonderful upbringing and my parents who like are still together. I always had a roof over my head. Always had a full tummy, and I'm sitting there listening to it, like, yeah, man, Jonathan, I relate, man. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, screw him, burn his house down.
Dylan Haggett said, can Cena give Roman what Steven Larsen have dubbed cry face?
Wait, what?
I don't know, maybe he can do. And Gary Pierce, very lastly, said, I thought the paper was very good. Very much enjoyed it, but the best part of the viewing experience was watching your reactions and realizing that Tempest with his new mask is what happens when Hello Kitty and Khal Drogo from Farscape have a child together. I mean, you mentioned Farscape there. Farscape was not my show.
No, same. Are we Googling now?
We're going to have a quick Google of it now. Yep. I mean, he looks like a Farscape character, I'll tell you that much.
What's the name of the character?
Khal Drogo. I'll pop it into the, because it's sort of like an apostrophe and stuff like that, because obviously it's science fiction. So it's spelled like that. Of course it is. I think it's quite funny because he just looks like he's always got a very like ruddy nose. Like it's
that is quite funny.
He's constantly got hay fever and he's just been blowing his nose all day long.
I just love the fact that it's just like after every Quizlemania, because we've seen what's underneath Tempest's mask, not to blow the lid off the business or anything, but after every stream, after every Quizlemania, he had this just horrible sore red nose. We're like, mate, you need to get a mask with a bigger nose on it. And he's overcorrected. It's you know, he's gone too far. Because it's such a big block color.
It's very pink. It's just...
Which, you know, nothing against pink. It's just that pink on white, it just shines out and it makes him look like he's got a ginormous nose.
And he looks so sad in every photo because you got this big red.
He looks like one of those proper kind of alcoholic mates of your dad's from down the working men's club. Proper wine conk, like,
it looks like the sort of mask that would be on the front cover of a really cheap horror movie, of like the clown that, like, the sad clown that went mad and started murdering kids in that.
Honko the murdering clown.
Honko the murder clown. Right, well, on that note, on that bombshell, let's break
on that bombshell.
Thank you all so much for watching. Please do consider subscribing to the channel if you haven't already. We are nearing our 50,000 subscriber goal. Please do also pull your thumb out and give us a thumbs up as well before you do leave this video. Very much appreciate every single person tuning in for this show. I've been Luke Cohen. That has been Adam Blompier. He's got to go and play some board games with Denise Salcedo. Jam that jam, everyone. Jam that jam. Bye, Adam.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.